Okay, just before Rav Stav speaks on social justice in Israel, he alluded to some of the problems yesterday. I think he's going to elaborate at a greater length, talk on the conversion issue. I just do want to make mention, I mentioned earlier, he mentioned Rav Shach, Rav Avadia Yosef, the Satmar Rebbe. Tomorrow night on E-Team, Mark Shapiro is doing his next round in series on Gedolim. For those who have not been online, from a technological, you know, a technology point of view, it's really, as I mentioned, you can sit at your home on your computer, see the speaker, you can talk to him, he talks to you, you hear him, you can write questions in the middle of class, they go on the bottom of the screen, you can write individual questions. Really a phenomenal experience for those who have been, are shaking their heads. Those who haven't been, I invite them, it's all free. There isn't any charge. It isn't free, but there isn't a charge. Dr. Shapiro's class, he's doing a five-part series. The first two on Rav Shach, then on the Nazir, Rav David Cohen, and then two on Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. And that's, I think, one of the beauties of the series. It's really, there are 35 archived already. We have all 35. You can download in your MP3. 29.99 for all 35. It's really a fascinating series. So that is tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. When you go home, go to torahinmotion.org, hit the link. They'll register you in 2 minutes. So that's just by way of introduction. Okay, now back to the topic at hand. Rav Stav will now he'll conclude. It's a little later than 9:30 that we originally planned on issues on social justice in Israel. Again, he needs no introduction. I just want to say it's been a pleasure having him all Shabbos and really hearing his words. One person came to me in shul yesterday and said that you can tell he's a person making a difference in Israel just from hearing him speak, his leadership and his menschlichkeit and the sort of his whole attitude towards dealing with the problem. I think it's a pleasure to hear him, and it's our honor to have you over the weekend.
Thank you for the very warm word. I hope I deserve it. I must, after the last panel that we held here, go out of the program and to repeat a verse that I used yesterday in Rav Kerman's house. One of Rav Kerman's sons, his name is Elisha. So yesterday night I asked this guy, Elisha, what do you know about Elisha? And he answered me that Elisha was a prophet. That's correct. And what do you know about his prophecy, about his personality? He said that he knows that he was an Eliyahu student. But, and then I asked him, what else do you know about this Elisha? And it was about this. It's very nice that he knew all these details. And then I quoted a verse that was said to Elisha by the people of Jericho. It's an unbelievable verse. He asked them, what's doing in Jericho? And they answer him the following answer. Moshav ha'ir ha'hi tov. It's a very good place to live. It's a very good place. Hamayim ra'im. The water is bad. Ve'ha'aretz meshakelet. Meshakelet in Hebrew means that people are dying there because of the land. Rivka says to Yitzhak when she urges him to convince Yaakov to go to Lavan, to Lavan's land, she says, Lama eshkal gam shnechem yom echad. Why should I lose both of you in one day, because she's afraid that Yaakov will kill Esav and Esav will kill Yaakov. We say in Hebrew, if a family loses one of its sons in a war, we call them Mishpacha Shakula. So what kind of an answer does Elisha get? Moshav ha'ir tov, the water is bad, and people are dying there, so what's good there? The answer is that it's a kind of complexity. Eretz Israel is Tov. The state of Israel is Tov. But it doesn't mean that we have no problems. We have problems of dying, of wars. We have problems of water. We had no water this year, the last year. Actually, for the last 4 years, we suffer of a lack of shortage of water. But still, Moshav Ahir Ha'u Tov. The settling, the sitting, the being in this Jewish state is good. I must start with this, begin with this, because I feel, and especially before, because I know what I'm going to speak about in a few minutes, when we talk about social justice in the state of Israel, we have to begin with Moshav Ha'ir Ahu Tov. Amakom Metsuyan. The place is wonderful. But still we face a lot of problems. Israel is the only state in the world, Baruch Hashem, that considers itself as a Jewish state. And the definition of being a Jewish state is not just a kind of a declaration that you put in the himnon or in the paper or in the media. The definition of being a Jewish state influences us and has a lot of consequences in the day life in the state of Israel for many, many citizens. It is not just a kind of a declaration. Although, despite the fact that most of the people are not religious, but the fact that we define the state of Israel, and when I'm saying defined, it's not that I define, but the law defines the state of Israel to be a Jewish state, has a lot of impacts to every Jewish boy, man and woman, in various issues when they want to establish their life constantly, to build their life in the state of Israel. And I will start with two basic examples that originally I wanted to begin with something else, but because of the current news, I want to start with this with these examples, and if we'll have time, we'll go to the original examples. If someone, Rav Shlomo, ended his speech, his lecture, saying or reminding us that if someone wants to get married in Israel, he has to register in the Rabbanut. That's correct. But this is the first part of the story. But if someone wants to get married in Israel, if he's Jewish, he's not allowed to get married in Israel because with a non-Jewish girl. Or a Jewish girl is not allowed to get married with a non-Jewish boy, which is something wonderful for us, from the religious point of view, that we want to encourage the Jewish continuity, and we want to fight with the assimilation. But if you look from the human rights point of view, it's something terrible. I mean, if someone wants to get married, he serves in the army, he goes to the reserves, and he's working in the industry or in the high tech or wherever. He's a very good citizen, he pays taxes. But when it comes to the very fundamental right to build his house with a woman he loves, he can't do it in the state of Israel, because Israel is a Jewish state. And in the Jewish state, you can't get married with a non-Jewish woman. If you are Christian and you want to get married with a Christian girl, it's no problem. If you are Muslim and you want to get married to the Muslim woman, it's also not a problem. Because you go to the head of the religion you belong to and you get married. Well, by the way, this law exists in the state of Israel before the state was established. It's a kind of inheritance that we inherited from the British mandate that governed in the state of Israel, in the land of Israel. And that every couple has to register in the office of the head of his religion. But in the current time, we have hundreds of thousands of people that immigrated from Russia and that are not identified as Jews, and they want to get married. They grow up in Israel, they go to the army, and they want to get married, and they can't get married in Israel. Now, it's very hard to explain to a youngster that grew up with this Russian girl or with this Russian boy in the high school, and they went to, and they grew up as Jews, because nobody checked if his father is Jewish or his mother is Jewish, because according to the Chok HaShvut, everyone that his father or his mother, and even if his grandma or his grandpa are Jewish, according to the compare to the Nuremberg laws that define Jewish people according to their race until the grandpa, according to Chok HaShvut, this man is considered to be Jewish for the issue of Chok HaShvut, and he had the right to make Aliyah. And now he grew up in Israel, and he can get married in Israel. I'm not talking about our problems, our problems that has no connection with the immigrants. I mean, if a Kohen wants to get married to a Grusha or to a converted woman, which is not allowed according to the Halakha, and it is not allowed according to the Halakha, and we can't change it and we don't want to change it, but he can't get married in Israel because no one, no rabbi will register him. And if no one will register him, so he won't be able to get married in Israel. So such a fundamental right that every human being deserves in the state he lives, he doesn't get in the state of Israel. So it's a kind of what they call, and I can understand, a very big, very huge damage to the human rights. A second problem that is connected with this problem is the question of conversions, which has been raised just recently because of this case of the of Rav Drukman's Beis Din that made a conversion for a woman 15 years ago, and the High Rabbinical Court has made a decision last week that cancelled actually all the conversions that Rav Drukman and his court made since 1999 till now. We don't know to estimate the number, but it's more than 5,000 or 6,000 conversions. There are others that say that it's about 15,000. I'm not sure about the numbers, but it's couple of thousands of people, but it doesn't matter the cancellation of these conversions. I spoke this morning to Israel, and my friend that is working with Rav Drukman said that no one wants to begin a course of conversion now because they are afraid that it will be cancelled anyway in a year or two or in 3 years, so no one will be willing to get married. This all starts with the fact that the law of marriage and divorce in Israel is a Jewish law. And Israel is defined as a Jewish state. And the law of family, that all the impacts of family is acting according to the Jewish law, according to the halakha. And this has a lot of impact on the daily life of many, many, many Israelis. These are two examples, the conversions and the marriage of the people in the state of Israel. Now, I want to come back to the original topic that I was supposed to speak about, and I will refer later on to the ways that I think that these problems should be solved. The third problem that recently we started to be aware of. Well, if I'm not a prophet, I'm not a son of a prophet, but I learned a bit prophets. And if I would use the words that Amos in his prophecies refers to the situation that occurs in Israel in our time, if I would have used the words that he used to the kingdom of Israel 2,500 years ago, I think that I couldn't use better words than the words that he is using. The gap that has been made between the rich people, the wealthy families, and the poor people in Israel is getting bigger and bigger. I think it's in the first place in the Western world. And we had just a case recently, which is a kind of abuse, the way the government behaved with the Holocaust survivors. I guess you heard this about this. But it's not only regarding the Holocaust survivors. If we will talk about the way the government treats the handicapped children, the way the schools are accessible to the people that are paralyzed or have other problems that cannot go to the shul. There was a problem in Israel recently raised by one of the organizations regarding the accessibility of the mikvahs that were not accessible to women that did not have the way to go to the mikveh. And I could come with a long list of problems that we face in Israel regarding the way we treat the weak people. It's a really a shame. But I don't want to apologize, but I want to explain something. During the Shabbos that we spent, the wonderful Shabbos that we spent here in our Chaim congregation, I spoke a lot about the difference between running a community and behaving as individuals and running a state. It's something totally different. We know what Daka means. The Rambam says this is the biggest mitzvah. The Rambam doesn't mark many times mitzvot. And he says to give tzedakah is the biggest mitzvah a Jewish man and woman could make. Ki yedatev leman asher yetzave et banav acharav veshamru derech Hashem la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat. The Rambam translates the word tzedakah not as justice, that is tzedek, but he translates it by using the word charity. And he says to make tzedakah, to do tzedakah, is the biggest mitzvah aseh that a man could perform. That's correct. And Rambam continues and says that there was no community in Jewish history. And the Rambam is a halachic sefer. It's a law book. It's not a legend book. It's not a medrash. And it's not a gemara. And the Rambam says there was no Jewish community in Jewish history that did not take care of tzedakah. And that's correct also. But it has nothing to do with the way how state should run itself, or how should we manage the activities of the state when it comes to the welfare affairs. And I must add my words to the words that my colleague Rav Sherlo said previously. We didn't write our vision. How should our country look like when it comes to welfare affairs? Do we know if we have to subsidize products or not? Do we have to subsidize education or not? I know that here the tuition of elementary school and high school is very high in Israel as well. You know that to send your son and your daughter, if you have families like that 6, 7, and 8 kids, and you have to send them to a yeshiva high school and to Ulpena, and it doesn't end there, and then you have to send them to מכינה, או to הסדר ישיבה, או to מדרשה לבנות, you have to pay 18 or 20,000 shekels a year, and when we're talking about Israeli salary, it means a lot of money. We all know that the Gemara says, "Izaharu bivnei aniyim shemehem tetze Torah." You should give respect to the children of the poor people, because mehem tetze Torah. And we know for sure that the religious education in Israel is actually an education system that fits to the rich people and doesn't fit to the poor people. I know for sure that hundreds, I don't want to say thousands, but I'm sure about the number of hundreds of students that didn't go to religious and didn't get religious education because of the fees of the that the parents had to pay, and they did not have the money to pay for the kids in the ulpenot or in the yeshivot tichoniot. And as you can imagine, if someone doesn't go to the religious education, he will not end up as a religious boy or girl. But we never wrote our vision how should this country, this state look like when it comes to deal with these justice efforts. But still, I want to talk about the Moshav Ha'ir Ahu Tov, along with Hamayim Ra'im Veha'aretz Meshakelet. Recently, it can teach us a very deep lesson, how things are changeable. I mean, things can be changed by people like me and you and us. A few boys, after army, they finished the army, and they established an organization called Ma'aglei Tzedek, Justice Circles, to translate it literally. And these boys decided that they want to put the issue of social justice on our daily agenda, of the religious Zionist agenda. And they came to us, to me, and to Rav Sherlo, and to other rabbis, to Rav Ariel, to the religious Zionist rabbis. And they said, we must do something. And the first activity they have done was to gather on Shiva Asa Betamuz. We thought there will come hundreds of people. Eventually, we ended with more than 2,000 people that were gathering on Shiva Asa Betamuz, between Mincha and Maariv in Yerushalayim, to hear more than 40 shiurim regarding the issue, the importance of the issue of social justice. This was the beginning. But afterwards, they said it's not enough. Rav Sharu has mentioned before, to be the supervisor or the inspector of the kashrut. We are supervisors of kashrut. But these youngsters suggested, let's establish a new sort of kashrut, a new supervision of kashrut. And this kind of kashrut would be consisted not only if it's ma'aser or it's not ma'aser, it's this way of Shemitah or this way of Shemitah, but we will insist to check if the employee gives the minimum salary to his workers, to his employers, if he gives them the salary on time, if the restaurant or the hall that he runs is accessible to paralyzed people, etc., etc. And it's called Tav Kashrut Chevrati, social, I don't know what Tav, to translate the word Tav. Tav is a kind of a sign, a stamp. A social kashrus stamp. That's a certificate that confirms that it was checked by us. A few years later, I mean, we are about 2 or 3 years later, and I think that there isn't at least one religious boy or girl that you'll ask him, do you know about Maglev Tzedek? I'm not telling you that every restaurant took this supervision. There are, especially in Jerusalem and Petah Tikva, there were many of them, many stores that wanted to get this kind of supervision. But they brought it up to our agenda. There isn't a Rav in Eretz Yisrael in the current time, after a long period of time, that we used to speak the primary time about Eretz Yisrael issues, the political issues. It wouldn't happen now. The right wing and the left wing came to the conclusion that you can't speak about Eretz Yisrael if this issue will not be accompanied with the issue of social justice, for example. I'm not saying that this is the solution, but this is one step in a long way. As I've said before, we are a nation of a long way. It's one of the first steps. I know that Rav Kerman asked me to leave a few minutes for questions, but I want to end my idea regarding the first two examples. Well, in the Jewish society and among the religious rabbis, there are three directions regarding the issue that we have raised in the beginning of my words, regarding the problem of the conversions and the divorce and marriage. There is one direction that is led by Rav Bakshi Doron, the former chief rabbi, the Sephardic chief rabbi, the former chief rabbi, and he holds that it's time for separation between state and religion, and one of the results is the consequences will be that there will be no tension between religious and non-religious people, because whoever doesn't want to marry his wife in a religious way, he will go to register in the municipality or wherever he wants to, and then he will have no reason to hate the religious administration, the chief rabbinate, and we will gain, by the way, the byproduct of this decision will be that there will be no mamzerim, because if you don't get married in a religious way, we don't care how you get divorced, because anyway you are not married, so there is no problem of mamzerim. So who cares what you're going to do? That's one direction that used to be held by the left wing of the Zionist religious rabbis and a part of the Haredi rabbis, and by now recently by Rav Bakshi Doron. This is one direction in order to solve this problem. There is a second way of direction that claims we don't have to change nothing. It's kind of a waves, times are up, times are down. We will overcome it. There is a problem, but the non-Jewish Russians will immigrate eventually from this state because they won't survive here because of the difficulties that are taking place in Israel. So we have to breathe deep and to understand that the problem is not so big as it's described by you, by us, and we will overcome. That's a second kind of solution, or I would say ignoring the problem and having confidence in Ribbono Shel Olam that he will solve the problem. We in Tzohar, we support a middle way. We are opposing the idea of separation between state and religion, either because of ideological reasons, but basically because of practical reasons. The immediate result of such a decision will be that the Russians or the non-Jewish or the non-religious people will have no motivation whatsoever to become closer to Yiddishkeit. The non-Jewish Russians will have no motivation to convert. Because if they can marry without conversion, so what's the problem? And then we actually, in our hands, we create a state of minorities. There will be one minority, one community of the Russians. There will be a second community of the Ethiopians. There will be a third community of the secular people that will not be allowed in a few years, they will not be allowed to get married with religious ones, because there will be so many, not Mamzerim, but non-Jewish among them, that we won't be able to rely on any kind of witnesses that they kept themselves Jewish. And there will be one community of religious people, religious tribe. And as you know how religious affairs are managed, you can imagine that the religious community will not remain one. It will be split off to three or four or five parts, because we know that one community will not recognize the other ones, not kashrus and not conversions, etc., etc. So after 20, 30, 40 years, the people that live in Eretz Israel will fall apart, actually. They will become to very, very many small parts that will have no connection. And I'm not talking about the relationship, the friendly relationship that will not exist anymore in the state of Israel. On the other hand, we are not willing to ignore the problem. We understand that we face a very serious problem among the Israeli society, especially regarding the issue of marriage and conversion. We thought of two small solutions that we estimate that cannot solve the entire problem, but it could encourage most of the Russian Jewry or Russian community to immigrate itself in the Jewish community. We founded a project called Shorashim, Roots. We found out that between 25 and 35% of the Russian immigration that is identified as non-Jewish people, they are not non-Jewish, but they don't have the way to prove that they are Jewish. Because their grandma that spoke Yiddish and remember the father and the mother has died already, or she was sick and no one asked her, and no one tried to see maybe we could find Jewish roots. And people that came to Israel, they were not aware of that problem, and they did not prepare themselves in advance to prevent this problem to grow up. And when they came to the Beis Din 20 years later, they happened to realize that they are not considered to be Jewish. Until then, they were considered to be Jewish or unidentified. And from then on, when they wanted to get married in Jewish way, they couldn't do that. And we started to searching their sources. We hired a few experts that do all the way from Israel to Russia, to Ukraine, Moldova, etc., etc. And they find the Jewish roots of these families. And they are halachically Jewish. I'm not talking about people that have to be converted. I'm referring to the people that are halachically Jewish. But you have to find out that this is the truth. You have to prove it. You have to convince to the rabbinical court that they are really Jewish, and they didn't have the way to prove it. I can tell you that just in the last year, we helped to more than 250 couples to get married in this way. Now, you have to understand that this kind of couple, once is defined according to the Israeli law that he is not Jewish, he is not Jewish. So, in all the documents, it will be written that he is Israeli, which is a kind of a hint to the rabbi that he is not Jewish. And since this point on, we lost him. And he will figure himself, and he will refer to himself as non-Jewish. And we estimate that we talk about between 25 and 35% of the people that are defined as non-Jewish people. Now, this is not a solution for the rest of them. That's correct. But it's a kind of a solution for a very huge part of this. This is on one hand. The second step that we have made regarding this issue is trying to convince the chief rabbinate that in these times you have to realize that if you won't be friendly with the couples that you call them and you ask them to register in your offices, you won't succeed in the main mission, the main task that we took upon ourselves to keep the Jewish continuity with the non-religious families. I must give you a short example, which was not made because someone was cruel or he just didn't pay attention. You know, in Israel, when you want to register in the rabbinate to register to marriage, you have to come 3 months in advance. Okay, it's very nice. If you come 5 months in advance, no one will accept you, no one will register you. Now, in Israel, if you want to plan your marriage, and now we are on Aleph Iyar, if you try to get a hall 3 months in advance, forget it. In the summertime, you have to order this hall at least 6 or 7 months in advance. Now, but when you come as a non-religious woman, you come to the rabbinate and you say, six months in advance, I want to register, they won't accept. Okay, no problem. I will come 3 months in advance. I come 3 months in advance, and then you are sent to the Rebbetzin that has to make sure that the date that you decided that you want to get married fits to your cycle. Because if not, the date will not be confirmed and you will not be registered. Now, you could imagine that a non-religious woman, she doesn't decide of the date of her marriage according to the demands of the rabbinate that will happen 3 months later. So she knows already in advance that when she comes to the rabbinate, she has to take advice from her religious girlfriend that she learns with her in the university or wherever. She takes advice from her friend, from her girlfriend, how to cheat in the rabbinate so that the date will fit to the requirements of the rabbinate. So the first lesson that a non-religious girl learns when she registers, she comes with full of love to the Jewish tradition. But the first lesson she learns when she comes to the rabbinate to register is that she has to lie. That's the first lesson she learns. And I asked the rabbis, look, why don't you start the registration 6 months in advance? You know that there isn't one couple that orders his hall 3 months in advance. So how could you expect from the non-religious couples to fit the date with their cycle? It's unbelievable. It's not reasonable. And you cause them directly by your behavior, by your demands, you cause them to cheat you. And if someone doesn't want to lie, if someone wants to be honest, and many non-religious couples have a lot of integrity and they don't want to lie, principally, and so they will not show up in the rabbinate and they will not register. And that's why during the last 40 years, although the population of Israel was multiplied at least twice, we are now more than almost 7 million, 6 million Jews, 40 years ago, we were about 3 million Jews. The number of the couples that has been registered in the rabbinate has not been increased, not in 1%, which means that it was reduced in 50%, proportionally. And if we take in consideration that the religious population has grown much more than the non-religious population has been grown in the last 40 years, it means that the reduction of the couples that get married in the rabbinate was reduced even more than 50%. And when we go and speak to them about the numbers and about the ways to increase the numbers without doing any special efforts. I'm not referring now to the psulei chitun, to the ones that according to the halacha are not permitted. And this is a problem that is very hard to solve. But I'm talking about a kind of a free market in a liberal modern state, and you have to fit yourself to these conditions. And if you want to compete with other alternatives that are in this market, you have to improve your services. And the first elementary, fundamental thing is to change the issue of the dates. Since when you permit couples to register, which is something very bureaucratic. I mean, it's something not. It's not principle. It's not something that it has nothing to do with the halakha. It is just a bureaucratic step that you have to take. Recently, I spoke to the chief rabbi. I had a meeting with him. And I told him this way. Look, you have a problem. You know that many couples want to get married, and you send them to chief rabbinate, to rabbinates all over the country, and they cause them a lot of problems. Bureaucratical problems and halachic problems which are not so important. Like, the official rabbinate in many places doesn't allow couples to get married on Kafchet Iyar, which is Yom Yerushalayim. So I tell Rav Metzger, look, you know what? You have a problem. You can't fight with these rabbinates. I understand. Give us the permission to be the shelter, to be the miklat, to be the garbage of all the rabbinates. That all problems that they face there and they don't want to solve them, or they can't solve them, send them to us. We will take responsibility on that. Now, we will not gain from this. You will gain. The chief rabbinate will gain from this. Because people will understand, will realize that the chief rabbinate understands that there is a problem. They don't want to force a certain rabbinate, like in Tel Aviv or other places, that are very tough with the non-religious couples. Okay, but they send them to other places. He promised to think about it. He understood that it's a kind of a solution. But he said, I can't give it to Tzohar by itself. I agreed. We are ready to share it with other rabbinates. Not only Shoham, not only Tzohar. Give it to the rabbinate in Be'er Sheva. Give it to the rabbinate in Kiryat Shmona, wherever you want to. Just find a kind of solution that people that come to your offices will feel that someone is willing to listen to them. It's true that it is not a solution for the edge problems. It is not a solution for the Kohen the Gioret. It is not a solution for the Kohen the Grusha. And to the real Christian boy or woman that doesn't want to convert and wants to get married with a Jewish girl or boy. That's correct. It's not a solution for everybody. But it's a kind of a solution. It's one step, two steps. And once we show, firstly to ourselves, and secondly to the society, to the Israeli society, that we are listening to their needs, and we open our eyes and our hearts to what they look for, I'm sure that other problems will be able to be solved. Okay, I know that I reached the time of 12:30. I'm not a yeke, although my wife's family is a yeke. If there is one or two questions, it's okay. If not, I'll...
If there are questions, could you please step up to the mic if there are questions? Does anybody have a question?
Just a question. I really have a comment about the demographics. Simply, there are projections made, how many Arabs, how many this, how many that, not relating to what you just said, stuff we talked about earlier. And I think that demography is a study of population based on data available. Now, if we don't have data on people leaving the country, including Arabs leaving the country, and we don't know how many have left, thousands and thousands and thousands, but they're not counted, then our projections on how many Arabs live between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean are probably way out of whack. And I just want people to remember is that we get all these projections. There'll be 2 million here, 5 million, blah, 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 blah. But that is really quite inaccurate. And many people have studied these things and have pointed out that, in fact, there's a lot fewer Arabs than we think in 10 years. Anyway, just wanted to say that.
Okay, thank you very much for coming.